Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're going to bring in the Dakota Political Junkies for our weekly conversation, and it is a post-election or in the middle of an election count conversation. Today we've got Jonathan Ellis with us. He's an investigative reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Welcome, Jonathan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori. Is it over yet? Can I come out of my bunker?
Nope, it's not over yet.
Okay.
John Schaff, professor of political science at Northern State University, joining us to talk about clothespins, I think, today.
Or whatever you want to talk about, baseball. I don't know what else we're going to talk about. I, for one, am happy that John Ellis is still in his bunker. I think I feel safer.
I'm coming
knowing,
over.
knowing that he's trapped, so not roaming the streets.
I had one of those moments today where I just had to turn everything off, every social media, every latest, you know, here's the latest headline, and just take a breath and, pause. So there was our pause, and now we get to get back into it. A big night, obviously, Minnehaha County ballots still being counted. So, Jonathan, let's start there in the city of Sioux Falls and what you know about just the massive number of ballots that Bob Litz and his team of election workers are still sifting through.
Yeah, and we kind of expected that given the number of mail-in ballots that came in. We saw certainly in the primary that they got kind of bogged down with that. And I say bogged down, it's just a slow process. You got machines mm-hmm. that need to be fixed and things of that nature, and you're in a kind of a cramped area doing the counting, not ideal in a pandemic. You're right. There's still outstanding races, outstanding reports from Minnehaha County, which will certainly, I don't think, is going to have any influence in a lot of the statewide outcomes we've seen. I think those are pretty well settled. But there are some legislative races where we still have to get some final results here.
Yeah, and we're going to get to those legislative races in a moment because they really matter for, the makeup in Pierre, not from, who's the supermajority, but just, the Democrats could be in trouble if some of those votes don't turn around. But let's start with the national election. And Professor Schaff, Dr. Schaff, mm-hmm. you've been watching this for a long time and talking about the polling and the final days leading up to the election, and you knew it was close coming in. That's not a surprise to you. Tell us a little bit about how things are unfolding and if they're consistent with what you sort of thought might unfold.
I think that this election was an election unlike one I've seen in my sentient life, and that I think going into election night, there was such a wide variety of possibilities. Everything from a narrow Trump win to a Biden blowout. I mean, if you looked at the polls, you could justify any of those scenarios, those two scenarios on the outside and then anything in between. And the way it's turned out is whoever wins is going to be extremely narrow. And it seems, though, because like I said, there seemed to be such a big standard deviation, if you will, in the polls. Some polls had it really close. Some polls had a huge Biden victory, and whatever happens, it's going to be extraordinarily narrow. And it's once again we're going to have another one of these elections, not unlike last time. And we've seen this in elections like 2012 was pretty close, 2004 was very close. That we have a very evenly divided electorate, and no matter who comes out on top. I know they're going to claim a mandate, but neither one will have it. As we sit here right now, if I was going to put money down, and I won't, but if I was, I'd put my money on Joe Biden. His avenues to victory are much more plentiful than Donald Trump's. But nonetheless, I think we have to sit here and wait till at least Arizona makes a count, and who knows when this is going to be. I think we got at least 24, maybe even 48 hours before we actually know an outcome. And then after that, possibly comes the litigation. And won't that be fun? So we'll see where things go over the next even, it could be a couple, three, 4 weeks before we get an official result.
Yeah. Are you finding, Dr. Schaff, that people are exhausted by the rhetoric of President Trump declaring victory and Joe Biden saying, you know, I think we've got this. And I mean, because there is something in me that wants to pass past Election Day and say, I don't want to hear that anymore. I just count the votes. I'll be patient for the result. But, you know,
at this point, what they say doesn't really matter, does it? Because
the
votes are all cast. I think they're all cast. Now it's all about the counting. But so now they're just rhetorically positioning themselves, possibly even for, like I say, for litigation. And I think, you know, a takeaway from this is precisely we demographically, this is an extraordinarily interesting election. I think people will be studying for a while, and I know we might be seeing a reshaping of the American electorate. We'll see if this sustains past an election where Donald Trump, he's got reason to be positive. He Donald Trump gained in every single demographic category except one, and the one that's supposed to be his strongest category, white males. He didn't win a lot of these demographic categories, but he did better than he did in 2016. That's amongst Latinos, amongst women, amongst black voters. And so the Republican Party may be morphing into a more multiracial working class party, while the Democratic Party might be morphing into a more elite, educated, wealthy, managerial, you might say, party. So, but we'll have to see how this plays out over the course of time.
Well, and I'm interested, John Schaff, about how he did in South Dakota as well, because by my last calculations, he wasn't doing quite as well against Joe Biden as he had against Hillary Clinton. But then we have this big missing piece of the puzzle, which is Minnehaha County. So we still, it's too early to make some of those observations as well, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll see what happens, because that's a lot of votes. Obviously, it's the largest county, most populous county in the state. And I doubt South Dakota is going to change that much from 2016. But what it would tell you is that there's maybe a slight decay in the Trump vote amongst what is considered his strongest constituency, and that is your white male voter. And we would see that probably reflected in our own state's results.
Yeah, huge turnout, Ellis. Those numbers again aren't, you know, all the way in, but Secretary of State Barnett said in Jones County it was almost 86%. So we can't speculate yet about what those total numbers are, but we're looking at 70%, 80% in some counties turnout rate. 30,000 new voters registered between the primary of 2020 and you know, this election. And but Donald Trump's support seems to have eroded a small amount, and we passed medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. This is an interesting state to live in, Ellis, is it not?
Definitely is. And going back on what the professor said, what John has said, you know, on these calls time and time again, that the president sometimes doesn't act very presidential. His manner is off-putting to some people. And I think that, and I agree with John that I think at this point Joe Biden definitely has the easier path to victory. And what stood out to me last night was what happened in Arizona. That state flipped for Joe Biden, and that was very telling. And if you recall that, you know, Trump had this open feud with John McCain, who was very popular in Arizona, and said some things that you just normal politician's not going to say about a guy who's a war hero and all of that and served his country. And that may have cost him Arizona, and that definitely narrowed the president's ability, if that counts, stays up in Arizona. That definitely narrows the president's ability to get to 270. And so that state to me is an example of what, you know, that his off-putting behavior at times, his lack of, you know, acting presidential, that may have cost him the re-election in some senses here.
Mm. And then what about his treatment of the governor of, now I've forgotten, Michigan? Wisconsin? Was the one who was the kidnapping?
Michigan,
help me. I'm really tired. Thank you.
Yeah.
There was a lot.
Yeah. Right? Is that her name?
Whitmer. Yeah.
Right.
I, you know, maybe there. I think, though, I mean, and to be honest, is maybe a little less so, just because you know, people were in Michigan were probably very frustrated with
this kind of severe lockdown that apparently these lockdowns, you know, they were locked in their homes, and they were just very arbitrary and capricious in how they went about that, and now we see that the lockdowns didn't even work. So I don't know that necessarily, but I think John McCain in Arizona definitely played a role in that loss.
Maybe it helps him in one case and hurts him in the other. That's pure speculation. So, because I'm barely learning about South Dakota politics. I'm not going to dive into Michigan or Wisconsin politics at this point. But let's talk a little bit about Amendment A, Jonathan, because we knew it was close going in. We had seen some polls that indicated people were thinking about it. I certainly heard from a lot of voters who were, you know, certain about medical marijuana and just hadn't made up their mind about Amendment A yet, and it seems like voters made up their mind. What does this say about us right now?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, we elect a legislature that is probably very openly hostile to Amendment A. We elect Republican leaders certainly Kristi Noem was against it. Others were against it. And they'll probably be trying to figure out ways to get around it. But here we are, electing. And I think last time I checked, it had a fairly decent lead of over 25,000 votes, I think. I think people have finally, and it's taken decades, have come around on marijuana. Simply because, I mean, you know, it's ludicrous to me that it's still a Schedule I drug by the DEA on par with heroin. I think that there have been enough people who have known people who've used marijuana, and they just understand that there has been a lot of government-sponsored propaganda over the decades about marijuana. So I think that reality has just settled in. And you look at a state, and if you would have asked me 5 years ago or four, three, maybe even last year, if recreational marijuana would pass in South Dakota, I would say no way. But clearly, I think that the opinions or the thoughts on marijuana and how evil it is or is not, I mean, it's definitely softened in the general population for sure.
Yeah, I think I did ask you 5 years ago and 3 years ago and last year. Let's pull the tape.
Yeah.
John Schaaf, thoughts on Amendment A, and, you know, I am 26 for that matter, medical marijuana. And, you know, this is a fiercely independent state, and it's a state that the electorate seems to make nuanced decisions and intentional decisions. What are your thoughts on how some of these ballot questions were settled this election? Unofficial results, of course.
It's tempting to make, when we're talking about the two marijuana measures, to make some joke about high voter turnout, but I won't go stoop to such levels. I think Jonathan's on to something, is that, you know, we've had marijuana initiatives on our ballots various times over the last handful of years, and each time it comes up, it's gotten a little bit closer, depending on how it's worded. And it seemed to be, even as we went through the hemp discussion, which is related to, although separate from marijuana, you could sort of see where things were going, and you know, just the unscientific pull of using my eyeballs to look at signs in people's yards. There are, you know, up here in Brown County, there are way more yes on Amendment A signs than anything I saw opposed to it. So it seemed likely that that's the way it was going to go. And I think I one of my students emailed me this morning puzzling, why is it that South Dakota will not vote for Democrats for the state legislature, but on various ballot initiatives that would seem to be kind of Democratic friendly, though I think marijuana kind of crosses some partisan lines, but things like when we had IM-22 or minimum wage laws, that side of the political spectrum in South Dakota seems to have gotten smart, is that they can't seem to win on the legislative level. In fact, as Jonathan indicates, we tend to elect a legislator and governors who are antagonistic to many of these things. Yeah, they seem to be at least smart enough to be able to pick individual measures that they think can get some support from the general population, and have had some success in doing that. And I don't know, maybe this is a preview for what we'll see in the future. There's going to be, you know, cherry picking, you know, the South Dakota left, such as it is, cherry picking one or two issues that they might be able to get a majority on, even though South Dakota will and does regularly reject kind of sort of the whole agenda of the left side of the political spectrum.
I think that's so interesting. And let's talk about that in the context of the state legislature, too, because, again, without those Minnehaha County votes, and I'll hit refresh here in a minute just in case, but as far, the last time I checked, you know, a lot of those Minnehaha County races are open, but Democrats have lost 2 seats in the Senate right now. Red Don Foster, Troy Heinert are in. Craig Kennedy did not run, and the Democrats lost. He was replaced by Republican. Susan Wismer lost to Republican. Mm-hmm. And in the Senate, the only the last man that we don't know votes counting is Reynold Nesiba, who's currently behind. But then again, those, you know, those absentee ballots have yet to be counted. In the House, it's a little bit of a sunnier outlook, but still some real challenges for state Democrats. And to John's point, Jonathan, you know, during a year when so many people showed up for, you know, Amendment A, to have that kind of hit to the state Democratic Party has to sting a little bit.
Oh, I imagine it does, and as you point out, I think, you know, there's still a good chance that the Democrats will pull out some of these races you mentioned. Reynold Nesiba, you know, certainly has a chance to pull. That would be a big loss for the Democrats if he were to lose, and that's District 15. Okay, that's like a generally that's a Democratic stronghold in Minnehaha County. Aaron Healy, an incumbent in District 14, is currently trailing. You know, whether or not she can make up that ground, we'll see. But you know, yeah, I mean, if you put this into context, if the Democrats are, you know, left with 6 seats in the legislature, that is the worst showing that they've had since 1953, and it would be the fourth worst showing since the end of World War II. So it would be definitely among the historic lows for the party in the legislature, you know, and they've seen kind of this a fairly abrupt loss for them, you know, even though they've been seeing kind of a gradual decrease since about 2008 when Barack Obama won. I think they had a slight uptick in seats then, but then ever since then, I think it's just been kind of a decrease for them. And so this would definitely be, in terms of state legislative races, this would definitely be a low, the likes of which we have not seen since we were fighting the Korean War.
John Schaaf, again, it's really important to point out that those Minnehaha County votes have not been counted, and many Democrats we know showed up for that early voting. So some of these people, like, you know, Jamie Smith and Aaron Healy and Reynold Nesiba, you know, could have the bulk of their votes really in envelopes right now. So we don't want to jump too far ahead, but Democrats have definitely lost Susan Wismer's seat, Craig Kennedy's seat in the Senate, and who is in the House? It is Ray Ring, who did not run again, and Democrats lost that seat. So they're definitely going down, it seems,
well,
again.
In fact, if
hate
I could,
to speculate,
okay,
as we still count votes. Yeah, jump in, though.
The Susan Wismer seat, because this would have nothing to do with Minnehaha County, because it's in the northeast. In fact, it's just north of where I'm sitting
right
now.
Yeah, that one's decided,
And that's it's an interesting case. So Susan Wismer has been a state senator and representative, you know, kind of jumping back in District 1 for a long time. And District 1 is one of those districts where when we went through redistricting after the 2010 census, you know, if you want to call it gerrymandered, you know, when the Republicans gerrymandered the state, District 1 was supposed to be a district that they sort of gave to the Democrats. That's supposed to be a Democratic district, and in the legislature this coming January, two out of the three legislative seats from that, you know, the two House seats and the one Senate seat, two out of those three will be filled by Republicans. Tamara St. John in the House, and then Michael Roll apparently winning in the Senate seat. And that's sort of indicative of, even in a district that was supposed to be drawn for Democrats, Democrats are struggling to win. And it's sort of a sign of, you know, the weakness of the institutional Democratic Party, that the left-wing activists, as I was saying previously, have some success through the ballot, but the institution of the Democratic Party struggles to get Democrats elected in places where Democrats are supposed to get elected. And it's we've said this, I don't know how many times over the years, Lori, that there needs to be a new George McGovern and the Democratic Party, someone who is willing to put in the elbow grease and reshape that party, or you know, whatever, even if you're a Republican, I just don't think it's healthy for the state to have a legislature that's going to be, you know, 90% one party, and it's going to be in that ballpark no matter how Minnehaha comes out. It's going to be in that ballpark. And that kind of one-party mm-hmm. government, I don't think is really good for anybody. And so, but it's going to have to take some incredible feat of leadership from someone on the Democrat side to revivify that party.
Yeah, Tory Heinrich said that last night in an interview when we were, you know, kind of helping explain to voters, you know, yes, it looks like he's behind right now, but clearly this is the precinct that hasn't been counted. And but then he did mention, you know, with watching every race across the state, it is not supposed to be like this. And John Schaaf, he talked about that redistricting and the problems with it. Are there problems with gerrymandering in the state of South Dakota when you look at the map?
Well, there is no doubt that Republicans take advantage of the fact that they've dominated the legislature and the governor's position to make districts that are advantageous to themselves. I don't think anybody can question that. And I mean, my point is simply that, as I say, up here in the northeast part of the state, you know, they gerrymandered or redistricted, you know, if you want to put it benignly, they redrew lines for District 2 and District 3. That made those districts more Republican than they had been before, at the cost of, again, this is the way that you do gerrymander. You got to give a few districts to your opponent, to the minority, and let them win those and spread your own forces, so to speak, more evenly. And knowing District 1 is a district that was actually drawn to allow for the Democrat, they were going to give them District 1, so essentially they could take, the Republicans could take over District 2. That's simplified, but that's essentially how the districts up here were redrawn. And it says something about, I don't care how much anything's gerrymandered or not gerrymandered, if you can't even win in districts that have been drawn to be Democratic districts, the Republicans were trying to give District 1, in a sense, to Democrats, and the Democrats still are only going to have one out of those three seats. That's a sign of definite weakness of the institutional Democratic Party.
Right. Jonathan Ellis, another race that we were watching and didn't turn out to be nearly as dynamic as we thought so far, as we still wait for votes, is Rick Noby in District 25, the really only independent who was running at that time. Again, votes have not been counted. Those absentee ballots have not all come through. Were you watching that race at all? Do you think that's a surprise or an expected early results, Jonathan?
I wouldn't say it's a surprise. I mean, it's hard to win as an independent. Okay, I mean, mm-hmm. if you don't have the political party structure behind you, whether especially in this state, the Republican Party behind you, then it's difficult to win. Now, Rick was a little bit of a unique candidate in the sense that he had been a radio personality that was pretty popular, especially I think among some more center right people, and he'd been the former mayor, so he had great name recognition. But again, I think it goes to show, again, this race not being fully counted yet, but it goes to show that the difficulty of really winning when you don't have the party behind you, a political party
right.
behind you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about that after a break with Dan Lederman with the South Dakota Republican Party. He's the chair of that party. And so we'll keep this conversation going. But John Schaaf, thanks so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for being with you guys. Good time.
Jonathan Ellis, you can find his work at argusleader.com. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, everybody.